Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my gosh, what a better intro to a show based on civility and reason than Aretha and respect. It always gets me going. So hey everybody, this is Janine and you are listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Party Internet Radio is a part of the Be the Media Project. For a complete list of all of the Coffee Party Radio Network offerings, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and click on radio shows. And consider joining our team, Be the Media. So I'm joined today by Lunch with Loudon co-host, Loki King. How are you doing today, sir?
Hey, I've got my coffee here, and I am ready for an awesome show.
Excellent, as am I. So let's jump right into introducing our guest. We're speaking today with Margaret from Flush the TPP. And I don't know where to begin other than I have been watching this organization deal with the TPP and the Trans-Pacific Partnership for a long time and so admire their work. Now they're going to go to Washington with a petition, and we'd love to have Margaret tell us all about their efforts.
Sure, thank you. So the campaign that we've had now for a number of years is called Flush the TPP. When we first started, nobody really knew what the Trans-Pacific Partnership was or could even remember the initials. So we started using toilet paper imagery to help them and kind of stuck as the name of the campaign. So it was pretty funny, and it really brought out some great creativity. We are mobilizing for a national protest, 3 days of protest in Washington, D.C. this November during the APEC or Asian Pacific Economic Council meetings. And as part of that, we have a petition to Congress calling on the leaders of Congress to reject this agreement. It's been negotiated in secret. As you know, it's very anti-democratic. It will impact pretty much everything that we care about, and it was written by corporate lawyers to really benefit large transnational corporations. So we're asking them to reject it. We're asking people to sign that petition. Our allies in Europe who are organizing around a similar international agreement called the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, which the U.S. is also part of, recently mobilized a petition to their parliament where they were hoping to get 1 million signatures, and they got 3.25 million signatures. So the more signatures we can get, the stronger message we'll send to Congress, and we'll deliver that to Congress on November 18th. So if you want to sign that, yeah, November 18th, if you go to flushthetpp.org, you'll see right there on the homepage an image, and you can click on that to sign the petition.
And we've been promoting this signature gathering. I'm getting breathing sounds, so we need to be careful there. We've been promoting this from the first time we saw it on our Facebook page and in Twitter. I have to say, this is very simple, very elegant. To the Speaker of the House, Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Democratic Party Leader Harry Reid, we are writing to urge the Congress to reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP. This agreement would destroy jobs, degrade the environment, undermine the internet, and weaken U.S. democracy and sovereignty. I think one of the biggest surprises to people when they finally tap into this is the whole idea of sovereignty. Do you want to share some insights about that?
Sure. Thank you. I think this is one of the biggest reasons why we've been working so hard to stop this agreement. It's called a trade agreement, but it's really much more than a trade agreement. It only has a few chapters about trade, and the rest are really kinds of policies that corporations have wanted Congress to give them, but they haven't been able to pass them through the front door, so they're slipping them in. One of the provisions in this agreement is that it calls for creating a, well, we already have these trade tribunals under NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. But under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this trade tribunal will be a place where corporations can sue government if laws that we put in place to protect our health, protect the environment, interfere with their expected profits. And they can sue for loss of expected profits. So just imagine a community might ban fracking for health reasons, and an oil company wanted to come in and frack there. They can sue that community and say, well, we could have made billions of dollars out of the gas or oil that's underneath your community, so you have to pay us that money. Or if we wanted to label foods to know if they have genetically modified organisms in them, a company may say, well, that's an impediment to us being able to sell that food, and so you have to, you know, we're going to lose this much profit. So this is really a type of body that we think is unconstitutional. It will operate outside of our judicial system. People can't sue corporations. Governments can't sue corporations in it, but corporations can sue us. And the judges that will serve in this tribunal will be corporate lawyers on leave from their job. So it's a very anti-democratic type of body that will have a direct impact on things that we care about.
Well, you know, it occurs to me that the tools, you know, legal tools that you just described really do take the next step in terms of making corporations, their investors, their directors, their officers, not citizens of any given nation, but rather citizens of a global economy. And I think that that shows up in a lot of places less obviously, you know, like when, you know, we talk about all the expatriated money from American corporations, you know, they're just making so much money offshore. They shouldn't have to pay tax on that money, nor should it be taxed if it's brought back to the country. I mean, those things are much more subtle than this, which clearly says we are a legal body outside the jurisdiction of all other legal bodies on the planet. And if that's not citizens of the economy versus citizens of America or citizens of France or whatever, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, this is really, to me, this is kind of scary if they were able to move forward with these agreements between the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, and a Trade and Services Agreement. They really kind of build this new system of global governance, of global finance, that enhances corporate power. And really what it does is it kind of allows corporations to have even more flexibility to move around the world, to go where, you know, where environmental protection is lower, where worker standards are lower, where, you know, if we've seen this before, actually a company that is Canadian incorporated themselves in the United States, even though they do all of their business in Canada, because by doing that, it allowed them to be considered a foreign company, and they're suing their own government over laws that are banning fracking there. So corporations can go set up their offices. You know, Monsanto is talking about moving to the UK to set up their headquarters. If they do that, they're a foreign company that can then sue the United States government. So this is just allows them to have way too much power and flexibility and use that, as we've seen them, to exploit people, exploit the planet for profit. So it's really, I think we're at a big turning point now where they've tried to do these types of policies and get away with as much as they can through agreements like NAFTA, through the World Trade Organization, and people keep rising up and trying to fight back against these. They've really not been able to move forward very well with the World Trade Organization. We need to just really put an end to this and say we're not going to tolerate this type of system any longer. We demand trade that is something that respects workers, that respects the planet, and that's something that lifts us up and makes the world a better place.
Oh, exactly. And what I find so challenging about this is that it's so smarty pants. You know, it's such a smarty pants workaround to usurp sovereign law, to usurp trade, you know, national boundaries. It's, I mean, it's frightening to me to see how far this has gone, especially given that every poll that we've looked into, the American people are not so hot about this. And yet there are high expectations that it will pass. Is that true?
Well, I think just to comment on the American people, you know, we've had 20 years of experience now with NAFTA, and we've seen the devastating impacts that that has had on our communities, particularly with offshoring our manufacturing jobs. And they've done, you know, the media and the Congress and the administration have done a lot to try to keep the American public either not aware of what's going on or to put out falsehoods, you know, saying, that, oh, this is going to be such a great thing for us. I think we're not sure what's going to happen in Congress right now. We know that the agreement has been, we've been told that it's been completed. They're trying to finalize all the text right now, make sure that it says exactly what they want it to say. And we know that the president's administration has been pushing this very hard. The corporations are going to be pushing it very hard. But we went through a similar fight around this summer around something called Fast Track, which was something that the president needed Congress to pass a law that would give him the authority to negotiate this and sign it before it came to Congress for a vote. And people really fought back against that. It was very difficult. We delayed Congress for years, and when they finally passed it, they only had just enough votes to squeak it by, and that was with a lot of arm twisting. And so not sure that Congress is going to want to go through that again, and we are already hearing some members of Congress who are saying that there are things in the Trans-Pacific Partnership that weren't good enough for them. Now, unfortunately, what they mean by that, some of them, like Orrin Hatch, is that the pharmaceutical companies were using the TPP as a way to protect their profits to get very, they have a 12-year patent for certain types of medicines called biologics in the U.S., and they wanted to lock that 12-year patent in with the TPP, and they weren't able to do it. It was decreased to 5 to 8 years. And so now they may be putting pressure on Congress and saying, well, this didn't protect our profits enough, so we don't want you to pass it. So we're really not sure, but we do know that we have to make sure, we can't let our guard down. We have to be very vigilant, seeing when it comes to Congress. The president controls that timing, so he may decide to do it at a time when he thinks it has the best chance of passing. We have to educate ourselves and continue to mobilize and be ready to fight this in a big way when it does finally come to Congress. It can't take anything for granted.
So what I'm hearing is that there's three things immediately that listeners could do if they have concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. One is to go to your website or go to your Facebook page, click on the icon, and go sign the petition. Very simple, very straightforward. A second one I'm hearing is to attend the rally. Can you tell us just a little bit more about the rally in D.C.?
Sure, thank you. So we're actually planning 3 days of actions in D.C., Monday, November 16th through Wednesday, November 18th. If there was one day that people, you know, could only come to D.C. for one day, we recommend that you come on Monday. We're going to have a rally that morning at the U.S. Trade Representative's office in Washington, D.C. It's just across from the White House complex. And then at 4:30 in the afternoon, we'll be having an evening rally and march so that people can join us after work. And that will be at the Chamber of Commerce to start with. And then we'll head down K Street where the lobbyists have their offices. And we'll end up at the Reagan Trade Center, which is where many of the trade organizations have their offices. And the theme will really be that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a backdoor for corporations to have greater power. And I think that's going to be a really large and a great march if people can come down for that at 4:30 on Monday, November 16th. Then on Tuesday, we'll have an International Day focus. We'll be on Embassy Row in D.C., which is Massachusetts Avenue. And then on Wednesday, we'll be up on Capitol Hill. So if you go to flushthetpp.org/fallrising, you'll get the full schedule of events, and we hope that people can make it in.
Excellent, excellent. And then the third thing, of course, always is to know the position of your own representative or senator and to encourage that person, to let that person know. So your petition addresses the leadership in Congress in general. And I further encourage people to, my representative is Peter DeFazio. He knows exactly what I think about this. Now, luckily, he agrees with me, or I agree with him, however that works. But I think it's important for us to also put individual pressure with a postcard, with a fax, with a telephone call, with an email, and let our elected know what we expect of them. Because I think it's too easy for them to feel beholden to their campaign funders and not to those people that actually vote for them. So you could, a listener could take the content of the petition, or just think you might run on the show or another reading, go to fleshtpp.org and see what kind of language you like, but get your message communicated to the people you elect and let them know what you want them to do.
That's a really critical piece, because when we were fighting the fast track fight and we met with members of Congress, we found that many of them don't really look at the big picture. They don't really understand the full implications of what these agreements are. And so it's up to us as their constituents to educate them and to really fill them in on, oh, well, you may think that this agreement is going to help this one piece. It might help this certain industry export more products. But it's going to do, in, you know, there's the big picture of what it's going to do to raise our healthcare prices, to lower our food safety standards, offshore more jobs. These are, you know, it's not worth it to sell a few more products when you have these devastating impacts that are going to happen as well. So I do really encourage people to learn more about it. If you go to flushthetpp.org, we have a series of tools pages. One of them is focused on education, and you'll find information based on many different issues: internet freedom, food safety, healthcare, what have you. We also have tools for action. So if people want to know how to create, you know, organize a rally at their member's office, they'll find information about that. We have a media education page if you want to learn how to write a letter to the editor. So there's lots of ways that we can impact our members of Congress, and we encourage people to really get on the ball with doing that.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it. And it sounds like those are great pages to check out if someone's interested in whether they're interested in just putting their toe in the water and, you know, participating at that level, or whether they're perhaps inspired to come to the rally and to the three days of action in Washington, D.C. I think it's important that we each do the thing that we can do. And, you know, not everybody can do everything, but everybody can do something. And I think that this is going to show up as one of those pivotal moments in our history, where if the people do not act, things will be taken. You know, action will be taken that has nothing to do with our individual or collective well-being. This is very clearly an economic shell game being played. And it's important to say, what's in this for me? Now, I can go various places on the internet and people tell me everything that's groovy about it, but I tell you, they all do an interesting thing, and maybe you know more about this, Margaret, but like one place I read was saying, oh, come on, everybody says NAFTA's so bad. It only cost 500,000 American jobs, and that's like only 3% of the jobs on any given, economic cycle. And then thinking, 500,000 jobs is like no big deal. So people who write like that, it's easy for them to write optimistic things about TPP as though those 500,000 jobs didn't matter.
Yeah, and you know, when we lose jobs like that, it has a much broader implication. I mean, it's devastating for the families that lose those jobs, and to communities that had, you know, factories offshore. To here where I live in Baltimore, Maryland, we lost our steel industry, and that continues to have impacts today. But when people lose their jobs, it impacts the broader economy, because now they don't have money to go out to dinner. They don't have money to buy, you know, all of the things that they need, clothing, food, you know. And so it does have, it ripples through the whole economy when these types of things happen, these job losses. And I'm sorry, I just lost where my train of thought was going with that. It was interesting because the White House actually a month or so ago, or maybe it was early in the summer, put out a statement saying that they thought that the Trans-Pacific Partnership would grow would create 650,000 jobs. And the Washington Post, which is a fairly conservative newspaper, decided to do a fact check on that statement and actually gave the administration four Pinocchio noses, because what they found is that the likelihood is it would create zero jobs. And what our experience has been is that actually we lose jobs as a result of these agreements.
Right. And sometimes, especially with trade agreements, it is so sometimes subtle about how that happens. I mean, I live in the Pacific Northwest, and one of my big examples for the what NAFTA did for me, so to speak, is that when Hurricane Katrina came, there was obviously this huge demand for plywood. People were not only just boarding up houses, but they were rebuilding, and huge demand for something like one day the demand wasn't there, the next day it's humongous, right? And yet we had plywood mills in the Pacific Northwest going out of business while Katrina Recovery needed this product, because all the big corporations that were involved in the big projects down there were using offshore plywood mills that were wholly owned subsidiaries of their own companies. So it's like there's so many ways to build in an unfair advantage that it can be shocking. And we can all probably individually touch somebody and say, here's the rabbit trail to how these so-called free trade agreements have kept us economically back in the 80s, and how we have been kind of fooled. It's like a flimflam kind of fooled. It's not so much a shame on me, it's like it's an orchestrated attempt to mislead where the actual objective is never said. You know, the actual objective is profiteering by a very few at the expense of the standard of life for the many. Yeah?
That's right. I mean, the way that we often speak about it is that these agreements are driving a global race to the bottom. So not only are they offshoring our jobs and lowering wages here, and actually the Center for Economic and Policy Research did a study and found that the Trans-Pacific Partnership would lower wages for 90% of workers in the United States. So it just drives down wages everywhere around the world. It drives down worker protections because countries are desperate for industries to come into them, you know, smaller countries or lower, you know, countries with less wealth. And so they're looking for ways to make it friendly, quote-unquote friendly, for industry to come there. And they do that by lowering their worker protection standards, lowering their wages. So these large corporations can just kind of go wherever, you know, things are better for them in terms of being able to make a profit. And that just keeps driving this race to the bottom. We've got to stop that race to the bottom and start demanding that, no, we need protections for workers everywhere because that protects us. We need good wages everywhere because that protects our wages here as well.
I love that, the race to the bottom, because that's certainly how it feels. And it's certainly what I see when I try to read what I can read about this bill. But I also think the fact that it's secrecy, the level of secrecy that my representative DeFazio described in an article, was really frightening to me. You know, he had to go to a room. He had to have a proctor standing there. He couldn't take notes. He couldn't take pictures. He could only read what he could read. He couldn't take notes that he could leave the room with. I mean, since when does something that's supposed to benefit the people have that level of security? That's just creepy.
Well, that's the reason that they kept it secret, is because this doesn't benefit the people. And actually, the former U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk, after he had left that position, said to a Reuters reporter that if the American people knew what was in the agreement, it would never pass. So that's been, you know, this is the first time, it's really unprecedented that a trade agreement like this, or an agreement like, being kept in such secrecy. The members of Congress that we've spoken to up on Capitol Hill said that when they are allowed to see it, they see portions of it, and they're very vague summaries, or they're redacted portions that have, you know, a lot is crossed out, and none of them have been able to see the full text. Congressman Lloyd Doggett pushed and pushed on the trade representative for months to try to be able to see the whole text and was never able to see it. So this is really unprecedented, and it's being done specifically because what's in there is not good for the majority of us. So an interesting thing has actually happened through that fast track process. They're saying, as a condition of that, that the text of the agreement is supposed to be released to the public for 60 days before the president signs it. Now, that's 60 days for people to read thousands of pages of very technical legal language, but we're preparing to have people ready to analyze it and try to translate it if we do actually get access to that text. But we're not sure that we're going to, because they've classified it, so we're really not sure what we're going to see as a result of that provision.
Well, this has been a clandestine process from the beginning, so to believe that there's that kind of transparency is, I applaud your suspicion on that. And, you know, Senator Ron Wyden from here in Oregon has, he spent a lot of time, years, as a matter of fact, trying to morph this agreement, this partnership, into something that actually served the people, to the point where I think a lot of people were like, going, what's with you, Wyden? Because he's generally more supportive of what I, you know, my personal set of beliefs. But even he, who worked all these years to try to get coalitions, Democrats and Republicans together to sort of address certain components of this agreement, he's thrown up his hands now and said, nope, this shouldn't happen. And I can't fix it. You can't fix it. We have to stop it. So the point that you made about how this is so contrary to the intention of, or the legal intentions of this republic's democracy, should be startling, frightening to us all. And we each should do whatever we can to say, this isn't how we do business in this country. The United States of America will not do business this way. And so, again, I encourage people, email, fax, send a postcard. Letters take forever, so they have to go through security. But a postcard right in the door, make a call. It's actually shockingly easy to make a call. The people who answer your call actually want to talk to you. You know, I've sat there in the lobby waiting for a representative or a senator, and they got interns out there who really want to talk to you, and they really do take down what you say, and they really do communicate it to your electorate. So I know you're busy. You're in crunch right now, Margaret, for your rally that's just around the corner, frankly, very soon. And so do you have anything you'd like to say to our listeners sort of in closing?
Yes, thank you, and thanks for having me on. I do want to say that it's because of people all around the country taking initiative that we were able to delay the fast-track legislation from being passed and made it so difficult for them to pass it. And because of the media blackout on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it was very hard for us initially when we spoke to people around the country. Very few of them knew it existed. And so we started organizing, and others started organizing. And just regular people, from talking to others in their community, sometimes they would take flyers out to busy places like train stations and pass out information that we together, all across the country, we were able to overcome that media blackout and raise awareness of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and Fast Track. And that was really tremendous. And it was simple for many people. It was just flyers. So there is something that everyone can do. If you go to flushthetpp.org, check out the tools pages that we have, sign the petition, share that with others that you know. You'll see lists of groups that are endorsing the actions, and you may see that there's a group that you are familiar with that maybe you can get involved with if you have time to do that. In Oregon, you've got the wonderful Oregon Free Trade or Fair Trade Coalition that does great work. So please do get involved. Together, we are convinced that we can win this, and we really need to win this to protect our communities and our democracy. So thank you so much for having me on today and for all that you're doing to raise awareness of this.
Well, you're very welcome. And Margaret, thanks to you, but thanks to your entire team. Let them know that Coffee Party's got their back.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there is a lot of energy in a small capsule of time, and I talking with Margaret definitely gives me that sense of urgency about how to not only the time clock that's ticking away on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but also on what's really at stake. You know, we all have to sort of prioritize our efforts. And so I would assert that this is something that should come to the top, you know, sort of come to the top of the pot that's boiling for us all. And we should find a way to participate in stopping this creation of citizens of the global economy. So, Loki, where are you left with this after having this conversation with Margaret?
Well, you know, let's simplify this a little bit more.
Okay.
Everybody that's a big corporation is actually sending jobs overseas, which is hurting our economy. They're doing it because they can get jobs overseas cheaper. However, they're using slave labor to do it, so they're actually using slaves. And perfect example or analogy you can use for this is, I'm going to simplify it. We're going to go real simple. We grow apples over here. Basically, what this TPP will do is we grow the apples over here. We send them overseas. They wrap them in cellophane and sell them back to us at a higher price. And we have to pay that higher price on this end. The other thing you've got to look is they are being really secretive and everything else with this bill. They don't want people to know what's actually in it. The last time they did something similar to this was with Obamacare, where everyone was saying, we'll know what it is once it gets passed. Well, idiotically, we passed it, and we're paying for it because nobody knew what was going on. It's time we actually tell the government once again, the corporations do not run America. The corporations do not run America. It's the American people that run America, and we are not going to put up with your bull. This is not good. It's just taking away jobs. It's taking away industries that we need in our own society, in our own economy, because our economy is collapsing flat out. And if we keep sending things overseas and paying a higher price to get it back, we're going to lose.
Well, and there's a economic price, there's a social price. You know, there's often difficult to see if, you know, from the surface. So my example about the mill, it was in I probably shouldn't say what mill it was, but you know, for a mill to go under at a time when the demand for its product has never been higher because of the preference of the contractors to purchase offshore plywood should startle us, you know, and even give an equal price. They took the offshore because they had economic interest in the offshore mill. And so this is very incestuous. If it were government, we would call it some kind of nepotism, right? So there's all kinds of economic nepotism going on. And whether it's direct or indirect, whether it's, yes, I actually own these 47 other entities, you know, like every time NBC says something, they have to tell you, oh, this story is about an NBC affiliate or this story. You know what I mean? It actually should be becoming painfully clear how few actual holders of the keys there are. So you can be related directly like that, or you can be related indirectly like, hey, we're members of this club. And it's the club that bothers me. You know, the club of those who fill K Street, the club of those who have way more FaceTime with my representatives or my senators than I do. Those clubs of influence, of economic influence, that donate money to candidates and then expect something in return. This is the ultimate creepy expression of that very sick and sad misinterpretation of the country our framers thought they were putting together. It really, I think it's devastating, and we must stop it.
Yeah, we already know that the federal government and a lot of state governments are corrupt, and that's not what the Founding Fathers wanted. That's why they wrote the Constitution the way they did, and they did a pretty darn good job at it. Yes, there's loopholes in it and everything else, but it's up to us as the American people to close those loopholes. Look how much, even using your plywood scenario there, Janine, look at how much, even during Katrina, I know that a lot of wood that actually came out of the Pacific Northwest, because I know RFP, Roseburg Forest Products, was involved in it. I know that Boise Cascade was involved in it, where they were actually sending lumber overseas. It was being processed overseas into plywood and then sent back to help the people in Katrina at a higher cost. Why?
Right. Well, because there's some kind of financial connection between the people using it and the people making it. That's why. It's this economic nepotism that we've been talking about. I mean, go ahead.
We're being pressured by other countries, China, to be for one, to tell that they're telling us how we should do business. And we used to be, America used to be the leading in all categories of respect, of money, of, education, whatever it may be, military force. And because we are listening to the corporations and listening to foreign countries, we have slipped so far that we are actually in danger of losing everything that we, our founding fathers and every generation that came after them, have put their blood, sweat, and tears in to create. This is idiotic.
Yeah, it is. So the point today of Margaret's visit to the show and for our discussion here is to basically say the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a tool by which American and other trade partners are forming an economic environment in which corporate needs, desires, and intentions trump national needs, desires, and intentions, regardless. I mean, it could be China, it could be us, it could be, you name off the 15 countries. But so it's almost like they're making this little nation-free cocoon. I mean, one of the things Margaret said is, hey, a corporation can sue a country for thwarted profits due to legal actions by that company. Thwarted, I didn't meet my sales goals, so I'm going to sue you. But and yet a nation cannot sue a corporation in the same venue. So obviously there are ways right now where a country can take on a corporate interest that can be done. But in this same venue, that can't happen. So, what is that about? That they now have, we can't win in that court of law, so we're going to make our own court of law. We're going to have our own rules, and they're going to transcend American rules or Canadian rules or whomever. They're going to have more power than actual national law. That just creeps me out.
That's ridiculous. It's a setup to fail is basically what it is. That's what it is. And unfortunately, it's happening everywhere. Maybe not with the TPP, but a perfect example of this is right now there's a situation going on down in Douglas County, which is right down the road from you and a couple hours for me, where the people of Douglas County voted in term limits for their city council members. Now, the one of the city council members that's currently on board is coming up against that term limit. So she is actually suing the county so that she doesn't have to give up her position. So you have the county suing itself over an ordinance that people passed. I mean, this is how ridiculous and idiotic we are getting with our society, and we're allowing it to happen.
Right, right, right. There's this whole litigious nature of things. You know, as a matter of fact, the law has become sort of the Punch and Judy show, I think, of those who have assets and those who do not. You know, so you've got to have money to even threaten to sue someone, and you have to have money to sue them. And I think too much civil dispute is settled outside of court because the proposition of lawsuits is just so economically devastating. It's just economically
right.
devastating. So this is a whole other, you know, so a country now has to go to, would, under TPP, a country would have to muster the assets to go into this tribunal and defend the fact that there is no, you know, fracking has been banned with the example Margaret used, because of the proven health effects in this community, and why they should not compensate the corporation that would have profited from that fracking. This isn't
right.
a huge reach. This is not a huge reach. And I think it's little bells should be going off for all of us. And if no other bell goes off other than I need to stay in touch with my elected so that they know what I think about things, or I can ask them, "What, you know, I don't understand your position on this. Can you explain?" I promise you they will. Now, the more we demand explanation and candor and communication, conversation, deliberation, I think the better off we are, because these things cannot stand the light of day. That's why it's been so secretive. That's why it's still secretive. That's why people doubt whether or not there's going to be a 60-day review period. If it is a review, is it actually the letter of the intended law, or is it summaries of the law? I mean, no one really knows. And given that this has been years and years and years in the making, and this level of secrecy still prevents you and me from seeing what's actually at stake here and what moves have been made or what strategies are included to support what they believe is at stake. See, I think that becomes probably, go ahead.
Look at it this way. I mean, yeah, we need to be in touch with our representatives, our senators, whatever. We need to be in touch with the elected officials that we put into office. But something like this bill here, if you go to them and ask them to explain it to you, because it's been so secretive and somebody's pushing a personal agenda, they don't even know what it actually is. That should be a huge, huge red flag for you to say, absolutely not. It's either you bring it up forward and tell us everything about it, or we're not going to pass it.
Right, right. You know, when I was a little kid, one of the things my mother taught me was you don't have to know why not as much as you need to know why. And so, my interpretation of this, you know, advice given to a little junior high girl was basically, tell me why. I mean, if I can't tell you why I would vote for this, then how could I vote for it? I think the question gets flipped to, why wouldn't you? Well, I don't give a damn about why wouldn't you. I want to know why
right.
I should. And I think that's a much more powerful perspective, whether it's whether or not you should go to the party, which is what my mother was talking about, or whether or not you should vote for some, you know, a candidate or an initiative, a potential law. Why? What's in it for me? And I don't mean like the me. I mean like the kind of ubiquitous me, we, the people for America.
Right.
What?
Right.
What's in it for this club I belong to? I know the club they belong to, and I know anything they do, it benefits that club, the Club of 400 or whatever they call them, those guys that could all go have a rubber chicken dinner together and actually, you know, could fit into a ballroom. There's that few of them, you know, running this show. So.
Mm-hmm.
I interrupted
and
you.
It goes, no, it's your show. It's perfectly fine. You know, another example would be look at jury selection. They always ask you if we can prove without a shadow of a doubt that this person or whatever did X, Y, Z, would you convict? My answer in that situation is, I don't know because I don't know all the facts. And until I know all the facts, I cannot make an educated decision. We need to do the same thing here. It's like, how can I pass something if I don't know what it is?
Exactly. Now, if we're getting back to what can we the people do, then what we're looking at here is, obviously, we can go to flushthetpp.org and sign a petition that's going to be taken to a three days of action in Washington, D.C., the 16th, 17th, and 18th of November. We could participate in that event. If this is a high-ticket item for any of our listeners, consider the possibility that you would actually participate in these 3 days of action. Or, as Margaret said, come the one day if you had to choose, because there's two public demonstrations on that day. And the third thing, again, is to go straight to your elected. And if you're not sure who that is, you can go to senate.gov and you can find your senators. You can go to house.gov and you can find your representatives. You can call them, you can email them, you can fax them, and you can send them a postcard, all of the above, one of the above, and let them know that just let them know what you think. I mean, possibly someone out there thinks this is a great deal. Well, you can still go to house.gov, you can still go to senate.gov. My objective here is not to say what you must think. My objective here is to say, I have questions and concerns. And I'm nervous about saying, oh, if I don't understand it, you should vote yes. You know, I just don't feel that way. So,
It goes back to, one, you need to do a little bit of research. And don't just look at one source of information. Go out and find the answers. Don't look at the main sources either. Go out and find the obscure sources and see if they match. If they don't match, there's a problem. Make those phone calls. Do everything else. You can spend, 30 seconds to a minute watching your favorite American Idol TV show, and you can text in that you want this person to win. Why don't you do it where it counts? Do it. Do it with calling your legislators. Do it, sending them a letter, sending them a fax, sending them an email. I mean, you type the email out once, you copy everybody on it, you send it once, it's done. It's that simple. Quit being lazy. Get out there and start doing something. Now, this is
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, and if you're ever perplexed about where to go for information, Coffee Party is a virtual, social media-based, but action-oriented conglomeration of volunteers, right, who are concerned about about things and stuff regarding this republic's democracy, right? I mean, that's who we are. So if you're going to use the tools of social media, one of the things you can do is just go to #TPP on Twitter, and you can start seeing what people are saying. And they can also lead you to articles. And some of them are going to be mainstream articles. Some of them are going to be not mainstream articles. But you get to see the variety, the kind of the lush the lush garden of opportunity to seek information and answer some of your own questions. The other thing is, I don't think you should ever underestimate the ability of your elected to educate you. So while I may often write to my representative about something I'm concerned about, I also write and ask questions, and they answer them. Now, is it a canned answer? I'm sure, because if I'm going to ask, people are going to ask. But the thing is, it is their position. It is what they think. It's what their cumulative experience has led them to, you know, put on paper and write back to you. And so that's another way to get information. You can also scan. It's hard to search Facebook, but you'll find groups like Flush the TPP and other. If you just put TPP in your search box on Facebook, you'll start finding these other organizations. Check out what they have to say. I promise you, you're going to stumble into some of these people who are very pro. And it's also interesting to see what is the pro argument for this. Ultimately, the point is a diversity of resources will always serve you. You know, I think sometimes activists in general are accused of sort of being the minions of some media outlet or another. And it's easy for that to be true, actually. That's very easy. Those of us who believe in the power of reason and who believe that the whole process of activism is a team sport, that we need to learn from each other, that we need to support one another, we need to question one another. There are tools out there by which you can sort of get the drum beats and find the sources that are meaningful to you.
You know, that's very true. And one of the things that I live my life by, and I encourage people to do all the time, is one, do your research, but two, ask questions. Ask a lot of questions. And if you aren't getting the answers, if your representative can't get you the answer, you go to that representative and you say, okay, find me somebody that can. As an elected official, that's part of their job, is they have to be able to lead you to where the answers are.
I think that's excellent. So, Loki, I think we've come to the end of our time. And as always, I've enjoyed having you as a co-host here today. Our thanks go out to Margaret from Flush the TPP. Talk about an amazing source. I wish she had more time because it sounds like we could have invested any nuance of this trade partnership, and she would have been versed. So thank you very much to her. Thank you to Flush the TPP in general for their tenacity in having not only you and me and the rest of us learn about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but also to give us avenues for action, a place where we can be effective, a place where the people can intervene with what looks like a runaway train in terms of the creation of the citizenship in the world economy that transcends citizenship in any one nation. So with that, thank you very much, everybody. Follow Coffee Party Internet Radio by going to www.coffeepartyusa.com. Check radio shows. We got a whole host of folks ready to talk to you. And while you're on the website, you can also take a look at that great big Join Now button. You could become a donor or a member of Coffee Party USA. Citizens United has not benefited us. We are an all-volunteer grassroots organization. Anything you contribute to us goes to the technology behind being a virtual social media-based activist organization. And all the little things and stuff that go into running a company, a corporation, which is, of course, what we are, 501c. So with that, thanks, everybody. Thank you so much, Loki, and coffee party on.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last, just kicking down.